Are you back, Barry?
Nope, the Zoom has taken over my entire screen, and so I can't look behind it to see where the audio information is, but I'm working on it.
I think it's fine. Let's not worry about it.
All right.
It's fine. I think it's fine. That actually sounds better just now. Maybe it was just how close you were to the screen or something.
Maybe.
So I just sent Elizabeth a message to see if she was joining, because I haven't heard from her. And I actually talked with her yesterday, and she was planning to take part today, so I was making sure she wasn't having that problem like you had. But I think, you know, Barry, I think that you and I could discuss this idea of the workshop or the training program. Who were you saying that you thought it would be good to include? I think your mic is muted, Barry. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. So the Bible people are the French people.
Oh, the French people, yeah.
Yeah, just because they work on the trait ontologies, and they are, they're built on the basis of the old gene ontology principles, which were abandoned by the gene ontology in 2006. And they need to be rebuilt to conform to the plant ontology and all the other ontologies.
So which people are you talking about exactly? Which French people?
I'm assuming that Elizabeth has a team of people that work for her.
Yeah, well, you know, for the organization, yes. Scattered around the world.
Okay, so then maybe, is she the only French member of the group?
So Elizabeth has people kind of scattered around the world that work on the different trait ontologies.
Okay.
And one of those people, one of the key people that we will be with us next week, her name is Rosemary Shretha, and
yes,
she's actually at CIMMYT in Mexico.
I see.
And so she's the first person that we're going to be working with. And we've actually had, so she's the curator on the wheat and the maize ontologies. And we've actually worked with Rosemary quite a bit in the past. When, you know, she's worked with us on terms for the PO and so on in the past, so she's pretty familiar with the ontologies. So she's a kind of a key person that we'll want to have involved, and she's gonna, I was hoping she could come to the meeting today, but she can't, so she's gonna come next Tuesday. So the other people, you know, we provide information for around the world, but people can access it from all over. You should be able to see the screen now.
Yeah, I can see it.
So the main curator there is Mary Schaefer, who was actually instrumental in starting the PO with Pankaj back in the day. She had contributed a lot of maize terms. We have this work that we're doing together, and I'll scroll through the slides here. I don't know exactly.
Are these slides available on the wiki?
Yes, I was just working on getting those set up on there.
Okay.
We're still kind of getting, it's a little bit slow, but it's coming. Okay.
Before you start with this, let me just mention one other thing which you may or may not know about, which may be relevant to what you're going to say. Have you heard about our United Nations project?
No.
So you know who Pierre Buttigieg is, I guess.
Yes, the ENVO.
Yeah, so he started working with the United Nations Environmental Program last year. And they have embraced the idea of ovo-foundry ontologies to support data collection of environmental data for their sustainability goals. And we're all going, that is to say, per Chris Mungall, myself, I believe Ramon is going to the UN in Manhattan for a 3-day working session to build the ontologies for the UN environmental program, or to build a framework.
Huh.
And we will be using what we have, clearly, and things like maize are, I guess, going to be quite central So I'm assuming that Ramon will still be able to say something sensible about what the plant ontology can contribute to this effort. But maybe I think it's important that you know about it too.
When is this, Barry?
It starts on Friday, so it's a 3-day event.
This Friday? Oh wow!
Yeah,
I have not heard anything about it.
From that point of view, it may be useful if I have your slides, so that I can show them what we're doing.
Yeah.
The whole CROP idea is very much within the.
So this set of slides may not be exactly what you need, but I can definitely get you whatever it is you need. I could give you a short introduction to the Plantiome project.
That would be very good, particularly if you have slides showing how all of this fits together with the environment ontology.
Okay, do you have a link to a announcement?
I can send you some documents relating to the meeting. That will give you some idea. Unfortunately, there is no document about the ontology content. These are documents that we only received this morning from the UN. They've been very disorganized. We supply the ontology content at the meeting. But from what I will send you, you will see the ideas that we're going
to
discuss. Okay. It's three attachments, which are, one is a very scrappy agenda. One is a description of the meeting that they held earlier, where they had these ideas, where Pia was presenting. And then one is a statement of the goals they're trying to realize.
Okay.
So can you tell me how I make the Zoom screen so that it doesn't take up the whole of my own screen? So when you share your screen, it really hijacks my entire screen, and I don't see any way of making yours.
You want me to stop the sharing for a minute?
Well, it would be nice if there was just a button I could press that would...
Yeah. You know, I actually haven't...
Yeah, I think exit full screen may work. Hang on. Oh, yes. Okay, I now have to do it.
Got it? Okay.
All right. So I'll send you these attachments while you're speaking.
I'm just going to say hello. Looks like Dennis is on the call. You there, Dennis?
Yeah, the question is whether I'm awake.
Hey, it's like noon there, isn't it? Almost?
Yeah, I know. It's time for my nap.
So, Dennis, I don't know if you heard what we were just talking about.
Yeah, I did.
Shall I send you these United Nations things, too?
Yes.
You're in the same city as the United Nations, I guess.
Yeah. They're over at 59th and the East River.
Yeah. Sending them to Laurel and Dennis.
Okay. So that sounds really great. Are you back, Barry? Barry, are you back?
I'm back now, yeah. Okay. I can see your screen.
So Barry, one thing to kind of keep in mind when you're going around talking about the project is we're really trying to use the name Plantiome.
Okay.
Rather than CROP. You know, there was some confusion with the when the grant was written, we were calling it CROP, and I know this is kind of confusing, but we're really trying to, we're calling everything the Plantiome Project. Because it really encompasses the common reference ontologies for plants, but it's not only that.
So, but you are still keeping the idea of CROP as a suite of ontology.
Absolutely. But so the problem is there's a lot of confusion.
I will use it in that narrow sense, and I'll use Plantiome for the project.
Yeah, and there's a lot of confusion.
You've just heard me talking about CROP, but I'm aware that the whole project is called Plantiome.
Yeah, and we're just trying to minimize the confusion because CROP sounds a lot like crop.
I know.
And, you know, being people that care about what we call things, we've been really, since the grant started in December, I've been trying to get more kind of a people's out of people's heads to call it CROP. So anyway, I didn't mean to nag you about it, but just something to keep in mind. And, you know, especially when we're starting to go out and talk about this to different groups, and we're trying to purge that CROP name. So, Dennis, before we get on talking about the trade ontology, do you have any update on the position advertisement at NYBG?
I thought I had a person, but I'm not going to get him, so I'm going to have to put it up on the Buttsock site.
Okay.
And I'll do that this week or early next week.
Could you send
me? I have to run it through our personnel
team. Okay. When you have that ready, do you think you can send that to me?
Yeah, I will. And then you can put it up.
Put it up on the webpage.
And you can put it on the AP, the ASPB site, right?
We could, yes. You could maybe. Probably do that, though. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I can do that. I meant that would be a good site also to put it on. Am I correct?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, I had this woman I thought was going to come. She was on the Avital grant, and they've been mining, going into the ontology and mining descriptions and things for terms. And so she had the right background, but it ends up that her husband's there, and she's going to stay there, I think, in Florida.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah, I agree. Because she was like the perfect person. She's got the botany background, but she's also got the IT background for it also.
Yeah, that's helpful. Okay, so Barry and I were just kind of talking about the discussion that we had last week, and I know you were there for part of it, and then you had to leave.
Yeah.
You had phone call or something.
Yeah, it's...
So this project that involves the trade ontology.
Right.
Some of this you may have heard. I'm sorry, my screen is kind of slow to respond here. Let me see.
I don't know. I'm seeing it. Okay.
Yeah, it's working. Okay. Okay. Let me see if I can go to
there. There goes a little arrow. There's the slide.
Okay, good. So you guys can all see that. Everything's
good. I was looking at that in your Venn diagram, actually. It's interesting.
Yeah. So this sort of just shows how the trade ontology interacts. You know, this is sort of a theoretical slide in a way, how we kind of pull in terms from the other ontologies. And the plant disease ontology is now going to be called the plant stress ontology. So that's sort of a new one that's going to be.
Why have you changed the name?
Because we want it to encompass stresses other than just biotic factors.
Okay, fine. That would have been what I would.
Abiotic and biotic stress.
That's why I asked. Yeah.
A sub-ontology, which will be the plant disease ontology.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Barry.
So just whether the plant stress ontology would include a plant disease ontology branch.
Yes, it'll include a biotic stress branch.
That was exactly what I was going to ask, Barry.
I'm a bit hesitant here is because it strikes me that the disease is what happens inside the plant, and the stress is what happens to the plant from the outside. And I would think we would need to treat both.
Okay, well, that's definitely something we'll need to talk about and consider as we move ahead. And this is very helpful.
And also, talking about stress suggests that you're focusing on environmental diseases in a narrow sense.
That's not really how I think of it, but...
Yeah, so remember, I'm not a plant biologist, so I don't know what you mean by stress.
I mean, having a disease, you know, having a pathogen attack on a plant causes stress in the plant.
Okay.
So
when would that stress be a disease and when would it not be a disease?
Well, that's something that we're going to have to consider.
Would it be the case that you could have a plant which is diseased without there being any environmentally caused stress?
I don't know why she didn't put the color coding in.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Could there be plant diseases which are in the plant, but which are not caused by any environmental factor?
Wait, well, when you say environmental factor, are you talking about a pathogen?
A pathogen or a weather event, climate change, water shortage, that kind of thing.
Meaning,
so they are what I would think primarily as being stresses.
Meaning, I think what you're asking is, do plants have diseases that are caused like genetically?
Exactly. Yes.
Well, plants can definitely have mutations, but I don't think I would call those diseases.
Okay, so that's an issue that we need to talk about at some stage, just in part for my education, but also because this is a good way of thinking about the structure of what you want to call the stress ontology.
Yeah, no, it's a very helpful discussion to have and way to think about it.
Those would have to be biotic mutations.
We could have a category like, you know, like genetic or plants don't really get like cancer. Is that what you're kind of thinking?
Yeah, but supposing a particular subpopulation of plants of a certain sort suffers a genetic mutation so that it becomes infertile. Does that happen?
Sure, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, that would be a disease, I guess, in some...
I don't think I would call it a disease.
Some of them are, like, they're viral diseases that give you crown call disease,
yeah.
Things like that.
But that's, you know, that's a virus.
Okay, now if that
also, I'll tell you a good example of a thing that happens in plants sometimes, or what are called burls on tree trunks.
Right.
Those are abiotic, those are just mutation driven things.
I thought those were often from an egg deposit.
Well, they can be, but they don't have to be. They're just tons and tons of axillary buds on axillary buds, like in redwoods and things.
Right.
So, I mean, and
so those are
I know what you mean, because except experimentally, when people irradiate internodes, plants really don't get tumor tissue.
So
they can.
You know, and if they do, it's in response to some kind of a
environmental
factor. For example, I actually did some work when I was first here in Corvallis on these galls that form on pea tissue, and it's from an egg that's laid by an insect, and then the plant reacts to that. And it's like a cancerous growth. It forms this giant callus. But there's that stimulus of the environmental factor. Hey, there's Pankaj. Hi, hey. Pankaj. You coming over?
I'm
from your office.
I'm listening from my office.
Okay, good.
I'm just looking. I know that there are some very large volumes published of plant diseases. I think if we are really obliged somehow to make clear how what we are doing with the stress ontology relates to what they're doing when they create gigantic catalogs of plant diseases.
Absolutely. And I've done some work here working on kind of I think she was a PhD student that was helping with this, we did some work with our undergrad, just going through those catalogs of plant diseases and getting them into kind of a disease ontology. And the idea is that that's going to be folded into the stress ontology. And
okay.
Our idea with the stress ontology is that it's going to myriad in aspects from the other ontologies, such as the trait ontology, because we describe a lot of these stresses in the trait ontology.
And for that to work, then we need to understand. So if the plant stress ontology has the root node stress or plant stress, then we need to define plant disease as a plant stress which, and then we need to have a differentia which will specify what makes a plant stress be a plant disease rather than, and then you would need to have an idea of what the other sorts of stresses are which are not diseases.
Right. Right, absolutely.
Barry, on that, this is Pankaj here. The question is, do you consider disease as a stress or the response to pathogen attack and the various phenotypes? So to, in some total manifestation of that response is a disease.
So actually, I think that I would prefer to do it in something like the way that you just described, because I think it just doesn't correspond to the English use of the word stress to think of a disease as a special type of stress. Certainly, it wouldn't work for human medicine. In fact, for human medicine, it might be the other way around. So I think that stress is more of a phenotype, and I think the stress is more focused on the environmental. I think a disease is not a phenotype. A disease is manifested phenotypically. Sometimes it's genetically caused, sometimes it's environmentally caused. And I think in the case of plants, most plant diseases are infectious diseases.
Right.
So what I'm gathering from here is that maybe it's a good idea to keep the plant disease ontology as a separate entity, and under the stress we include all the stressors and their responses. So stress ontology is a culmination of on the phenotype and the other entities, and that in it's basically encompassing the environment and all the responses that we have from that perspective. So it means
that would be my own preference, absolutely.
So I think what you and the other postdoc actually did was on a good scale, saying you were listing all the diseases in the plant disease ontology, right?
Right, we're going through and
disease names. It did have the environments, including which I would say that pests and pathogens were part of the plant disease ontology. I think we need to address that situation, saying whether those stressors actually become part of the plant disease ontology or they are maintained. Some of them, majority are actually taxon names, basically. So whether they sit in the taxonomy file or they go in the stress ontology file. So we might have to come look around that possibility.
So I agree with what Pankaj just proposed.
Hello?
Yeah. So on that side, that means, Dennis, do you think that nitrogen fixing symbiotic bacterial relationship is an event of a stress, or is it triggered by the stress?
Barry, did you hear that? I think your mic is muted.
Yeah, I was muting the dog, actually.
So, Barry, what I'm trying to get here is that in plants, let's say starting from the daybreak in the morning, right? Then you start with a certain amount of light, and the intensity of light keeps increasing throughout the day, and by its highest around between 12 and 2 p.m. and then starts diminishing by that time, right? So in essence, if I'm looking at a photoperiod and light quality responses or the stressors, there is a whole lot of variation at every time point during this photoperiod condition that we are looking at. and plants adapt to each and every moment of that situation from that perspective. So I think the scope of stress ontology is pretty big, but we need to clearly define what we're calling it as a stress. Some people don't consider those things as stress, but when we are looking at a molecular level, anything that perturbs the growth momentum or any physiology or biochemistry inside a plant cell, it's all a stress. Anything.
But what about the null case where the weather is just perfect? So there is no stress from the weather. That surely has to be treated ontologically as being of a piece with the stress cases.
So in those situations, I think they're always a control versus, but what is your control in that situation? Reference becomes very important. Right. So in the same plant, it could be possibility saying we are looking at what was the response in the dark versus in the light. So dark and light are two stress conditions and how it responded.
Where did these trait branches come from? Who created this?
So this is the one I worked on it a long time ago. And this was mainly based on the actual phenotype when we were annotating or the trait being evaluated for a quantitative or a qualitative aspect when we were annotating a lot of QTLs for rice and other crops in Grammy database.
And are these eight categories, standard categories used in reporting of climate-related data?
I started bottom-up.
Yeah.
So I had a list of about 200 odd traits, and then I started putting them into bins, and most of them fell into any of these. I think I used to have. There is another miscellaneous trait. There is one. Which,
oh, that's bad.
Yeah. So that
which
has
did
been
not fit
gotten
into
rid of
any of
so
these.
How does the anatomy related trait relate to the plant ontology anatomy branch?
Well, so Barry, as we were discussing by email, you can hear me, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I had to switch to my headset, but we have kind of built the anatomy and morphology related trait branch to mirror the structure of the plant ontology anatomy branch. And so those terms, we've been building in references to the PO terms in there, like the one that I sent you by email that we were discussing. That was our goal with the anatomy and morphology traits. So we're describing traits of the vascular leaf or traits of the stem, you know, leaf shape, stem height, those
okay,
kind of
things. Okay, good. I get it.
So this is sort of the first area that we kind of worked on a lot.
So what I think what we are looking at is many of these traits are what we're defining over here are independent of what made, whether it's a genetic or environmental aspect that is responsible for that trait's manifestation. I think we should be defining it in some way that what we're looking at the trait is a character which, but independent of how it was assayed or what result, what
right,
what contributed to its manifestation.
Okay, so then check that I'm understanding clearly, because this relates to our earlier discussion. So just as we have a vascular leaf, so we have a vascular leaf trait.
Right.
Just as we have a stress in the environment, for instance, elevated temperatures or drought, or so also we have a stress trait, which is the phenotype on the side of the plant, which is created as a result of that environmental stress. Is that correct?
So it
could more or less, yes.
So one of the leaf vascular leaf trait could be a CO2 compensation point, or it could be a biochemical trait, for example. So yeah. vascular leaf CO2 compensation point.
And then there could be a plant disease and a plant disease trait. So a plant disease trait would be like a symptom.
Yes.
human disease.
Yes, exactly.
Good. So then there is no issue. The plant disease ontology is separate from the trait ontology. Mm-hmm. It's just a different thing.
Yeah.
Good. All right. That makes me happy.
Yeah, traits are more or less like symptoms that you are evaluating.
Yeah.
Yeah, the manifestation of the stress. So I was just going to pull up an example here.
So there is one big trait that is not here, probably. I don't think it's here. Gene expression, for example.
Gene expression.
So Barry, majority of the traits here are listed barring the biochemical traits, okay? Almost every trait is a gross level, plant level, or a tissue or a cell level.
Or biochemical.
Biochemical may have the molecular or physiological traits in that situation. But I think what we are also looking at the finer level molecular traits, whether a gene A interacts with gene B or gene A upregulates the expression of gene B, right? That is a trait or a quality of that gene from that perspective, right? So I think many of these things are at the molecular level would all be considered as a phenotype aspect.
Yeah, you can definitely have molecular phenotypes.
Yeah. So can you just go back for a minute?
Oh, sorry.
So in light of what Pankaj just said, where would anatomical mutation phenotypes go?
So anatomical.
Do they go under anatomy?
Yes.
Or under growth and development?
Well, it would, you know, they could possibly go under more than one category, depending what they're affecting.
Okay, so you have a plant which is genetically mutated so that it is still stunted in its growth. That would go under growth and development trait, I guess.
So, right, and we could have like shortened height of stem.
Yeah.
Depending on how it manifests itself. Often what we've been trying to do is have sort of the morphological basis. One thing with the trait ontology, we haven't been so strict about only having a single is apparent.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these relate to more than one category. So some things have three or four parents.
Yeah. So what if we were doing this properly, we would need to work out what the underlying bearer of the trait is for any given case. So if we take the stunted stem, let's say,
right,
then the bearer of the trait is the stem. So it's an anatomical trait.
Right.
The cause of the trait is the genetic mutation.
Right.
And so, strictly speaking, we would need a separate ontology for causes of trait, and then we would create this eightfold or tenfold division as an application ontology on the basis of the underlying reference ontologies, which would be anatomy, cause, and so on. So mostly, I would think that the fundamental bearers are going to be either plant parts or whole plants or plant populations.
Right. So I think I agree. What you're looking at, the mutation type, right?
Yes.
What was causing that phenotype to change? Sometimes you know, sometimes you don't. For example, I'm just looking at a variety and it is showing early flowering, right? So, and I'm just looking at it in reference to a variety A versus variety B, right? But I don't know whether it is genetic, or it is inheritable, or it is epigenetic, or it is just a response to photoperiod, and genetics still stayed the same from that perspective. So it's the reason I'm telling you is that a plant being adapted from this region, Oregon, if you plant it in New York, it may or may not behave exactly the same. So whether it is genetic or epigenetic or something else, that we don't know exactly.
So that is another reason for focusing on the actual bearer of the trait, because we know always what the actual bearer of the trait is, because we always know whether it's a flank part or a whole flank or a flank copulation.
No, I think there is a gray area here. The actual bearer of the trait is the variety name or the expression, which is a flower or an inflorescence of that particular accession that was assayed.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm trying to say?
I get. Yes, I understand your point. So I will retreat in order to regroup.
It's the genotype which is the bearer.
Well, no, I wouldn't go that far. I think now you're going to.
Sorry about that. So another thing which I was trying to say is, let's say if, and Dennis, feel free to tell me about that. Let's say a mutation or some stress leads to increased number of petals in a flower, right? And it could be a homeotic mutation, which is obviously related with the development of more number of petals. So it could be a growth and development trait, but since there are more number of petals, would you consider it as an anatomy and morphology related trait as well?
I would say that it is primarily an anatomical trait.
Right. That's what I would say too.
But if we are looking in terms of petal development, wouldn't it be considered as one of the result of an ABC model description for a flower development?
I think it would be that as well.
Because we are looking at the development of or differentiation of flower meristem into more number of petal meristems.
So the reason why I am hesitating is because fundamentally the best practice here should be to divide the ontologies according to criteria like trait of, and then we would have the bearer, which would always be a plant or a specific plant population or a plant genotype, mm-hmm. Whatever is the bearer, the independent continuum. Mm-hmm. And then we would have what causes the trait. So we would have an ontology of the trait causing processes, I guess, which would include processes at the genetic level, environmental processes, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I guess then there would be, I'm looking at your list here, that would be, for instance, yield trait, which is neither, the trait is neither such that the yield is its bearer, nor is it such that the yield is its cause, but rather the yield is its outcome. So a yield trait is a trait of some plant population or...
Yeah, it's usually a population.
In virtue of which the yield is reduced or elevated. But I don't think that there's any simple solution here because we're going to want to keep track of elevated yield independently of whether we know what exactly is the cause of the elevated yield, and even what is the bearer of the thing which is responsible for the elevated yield, because we may not know whether it's genetic.
Right.
Or.
And it may be a combination of factors.
It's complicated.
Yes, it is. Let me just jump in here and tell you that Elizabeth has joined us. She had a little connection issues. So hello, Elizabeth.
Yes, hello. Hello, sorry for being late, yes.
It's all right, we're all getting together today, so.
It's good to be late to your own funeral.
I think we're kind of getting down to the end of the hour. Elizabeth, do you have any update on the position hiring at your end, or do you have any updates you want to share with us?
For the position, it was advertised, but it's still going on because the deadline was 28th of February.
Okay.
Okay, and the other thing is because Bioversity is currently going through a, a large restructuring of the programs and organization. They would like me to wait for 1st April to start contracting someone.
Before you can even contact them?
We can select someone, but the person, if we have someone good, cannot start before 1st of April.
Okay, so they could maybe start the 1st of April. Well, yeah, that's going to come up fairly quickly.
The person is.
Sorry?
We could know who the person is before the 1st of April.
We have several applications, so we still need to look, go through. But of course, we have a strong candidate on our side, was Marie-Angélique Laporte, who was working on the project last year. She applied, and apart from her, I have something like 10 biodata.
Oh, good.
Oh, that's good. You've got some good.
Excellent.
Yeah, but yeah, most of them are more people with an agronomic background than any bioinformatics or ontology, so it's very surprising.
So does Marie-Angélique has a biology background?
Yeah, chemistry, physiology, and she's bioinformatician.
Interesting. So what would be your preference?
Of course, the fact that Marie already worked on the project would be, of course, convenient because she already knows the crop ontology, she knows the issues, she knows the team, she knows your team. Mm-hmm. So
Is she working for you at the moment?
Sorry?
Is she working for you at the moment?
At the moment, she's a consultant for FAO because a contract break. That is a mandatory break for Bioversity. So in the meantime, she accepted the consultancy for FAO for Johannes Kaiser's team.
Okay.
You know, I think them. She's working on the alignment of AgroVoc, Kaby, Thesaurus, on the big project called the Global Agricultural Thesaurus or something like that. But it's a consultancy, so as soon if we select her and as soon as the contract is available, she can start.
Great, great.
Otherwise, for the other biodata, I've been through very quickly, so I have no idea about other candidates and if I could share that with for other positions.
Yeah. And Elizabeth, of course, you have other key people that are involved with the crop ontology around different sites. And we were talking yesterday with Rosemary Shrita, who's at CIMMYT in Mexico and is the curator on the maize and rice ontology.
She didn't join today,
but she's going to join us next week on next Tuesday's call. So that'll be really nice to chat with her. So there are some other people involved already who will be key people. And now the person involved with the rice traits is Rory Hamilton, correct?
Yes. And I have to ask Pankaj again the name of the lady because in fact I had other priorities and I took note of the name that Pankaj suggested for helping Rory about.
Yeah.
Could you give me that name again?
Let me find out. What was her name? Just a second.
Okay.
Berta. Berta Kohli, I guess.
And I think you sent us some information about her background and so on.
Okay. Yeah, it's Berta Mairo.
You could write it on the chat.
Yeah, I can forward you that email if...
Okay, so just send the email to us.
Yeah.
The call next week, what time will it take place?
Same time.
11 o'clock.
11 o'clock your time, yeah.
And then are we meeting weekly? Or how does this
Well, go? The decision was that we're going to try to do it weekly because people thought that that would keep things moving. And we know that everybody can't come every week, but I guess... As much as we can, we'll try to do it weekly. There may be some weeks where we don't have.
And we could, as Laurel suggested, we could invite curators involved in the crop ontology.
Yeah.
So we invited Rosemary, but another time we may invite someone else.
Yeah, and maybe we could, on a future call, we could talk with Rory.
Okay.
I don't know, we might have to have it at a different time. I have to look at the
schedule. Yeah, because you are starting to connect with Philippines.
Yeah, so yeah. Yeah, and then of course the all hands, so we will meet next Tuesday the 3rd, and then we have an all hands meeting that same week on the 5th. So I'll send out a reminder about both of those for people. So good. I think we should go ahead and kind of wrap up unless there's other questions or comments. I'm glad we got a chance at least for some of us to chat. And I'll put up a few notes, and of course we are recording these calls, so if you want to, you know, if you miss a call or something, you can come back and review the notes and look at the recording if you want.
You mentioned that last week it was recorded. I was on leave, so I couldn't join. So I will listen to it, because you mentioned there was probably some questions I could.
Right. We talked with Chris last week. So yeah. Yeah. And if you need help finding that, it's in our Dropbox right now. I don't know if that's where it'll stay permanently, but that's where they are right now. They're in our, what's called the CROP Dropbox, which you should have access to from, it's the same one we used when we were working on the proposal. But if you need help finding it, you can talk to me. Okay.
Good. Wonderful.
Great. Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
And we'll talk next week.
Okay.
Okay. And, stay warm out there, you guys, in the east.
Yeah, right.
You know, the flowers are blooming here, and it's been 60 degrees for the last 2 weeks.
You keep it up, and we're going to put a pox on you.
I saw them flowering there. I just returned back yesterday night from D.C., and it was crazy.
We have flowers in the glass houses. So
yeah.
All right.
We're kind of enjoying our little faux spring. Winter may come back. We're not sure. All right. Thank you very much, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.